So, let's come to our first great Buddhist of the 20th century, Anagarika Dharmapala. I have a slight feeling that I'm rather bringing coals to Newcastle here. Some of you, at least, must have heard quite a lot about Anagarika Dharmapala already in the course of your visits to this vihara. He was born in Colombo, Ceylon. Of course, it's now Sri Lanka, but in his day it was still Ceylon. So, as Ceylon, I'll refer to it. He was born there in 1864, and he died in Saranath, India, in 1933. That is to say, he died there in India just 11 years before I myself arrived in India. So the time that separates us isn't really too great. And I've mentioned that I had some personal contact with all of these five great Buddhists of the 20th century. And you may therefore be wondering how I managed to have any personal contact with Dharmapala, because he died in 33 in India. I arrived in India in 44. So how was that? But yes, I could say that I did have personal contact with Dharmapala. I can even say that I lived with Dharmapala for several weeks. Not literally, of course, but metaphorically. And that was when I wrote my short biography of Dharmapala, which was in 1952. I wrote it in connection with the Mahabodhi Society's Diamond Jubilee. And I was provided on that occasion with quite a lot of material about Dharmapala. And in particular, I was able to read many volumes of the Dharmapala Diaries. He kept all through his life, almost from his school days, a quite voluminous diary. And I had stacks and stacks of these diaries made available to me. And I went through them in the course of writing this biographical sketch. But I'll have something more to say about that a little later on. Meanwhile, let us get back to the beginning. Dharmapala was born in Colombo in 1864. He was born into a pious, middle-class Buddhist family. His father was the proprietor of a furniture manufacturing business. And from the time when he was 5 until the time that he was 8, and again from 10 to 18, Dharmapala attended a series of Christian schools, both Catholic and Protestant. Now, some of you may be wondering, well, why Christian schools? Wasn't his family Buddhist? Wasn't he a Buddhist? Parents, in fact, were very pious Buddhists. So why should Dharmapala, the future Lion of Lanka, as he was called, go to this whole series of Christian schools? Well, there was a reason for that, which was that at that time, 60s, 70s of the last century, all the higher education in Ceylon was in the hands of the Christian missionaries. Since 1802, Ceylon had been a British colony. And between 1505 and 1796, large parts of the island had been ruled first by the Portuguese and then by the Dutch. And the result was that Buddhism and Buddhist culture at the time of Dharmapala's birth were at a very low ebb in Ceylon. In fact, well, you'll hardly believe this, but in fact, it was officially not possible to be a Buddhist at all. Not officially. Children born of Buddhist parents had to be taken for registration of the birth, to a church, either a Catholic church or a Protestant church, and there they would be given a Christian name. Otherwise, legally speaking, they would be illegitimate and not able to inherit property. And this law, which had been in force for such a long time, was not repealed until 1884. So such were the circumstances into which Dharmapala was born. That's why he had to go to a whole series of Christian schools, and in fact be given, when he was taken after his birth to the church, a Christian name. His name was David. He wasn't called Dharmapala originally, he was called David. Out of the Bible, of course, for those who don't know your Bible. And, well, a lot of people don't these days. And he was known as David Hewavitharne. I hope I pronounced that correctly. David Hewavitharne. The latter being his family name. So, going along to these Christian schools, colleges, he had to learn huge chunks of the Bible by heart. It's really astonishing how much of the Bible he knew by heart, because later on the Christians might have wished that they hadn't taught him so much of the Bible because he turned it against them, he knew by heart, when he was still in his teens, 4 complete books of the Old Testament, all 4 Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke and John, and the Acts of the Apostles. He knew them all by heart when he was in his early teens. But Dharmapala did not lose his faith in Buddhism. Somehow he picked up quite a bit of Buddhism from his home, from his parents. And he used to get into quite a bit of trouble, even as a young teenager, for arguing with his Christian teachers. Well, all young, I was going to say young men. Yes, young men, not so much young women, apparently. All young men are a bit argumentative. Teenagers are a bit argumentative. I think I was as a teenager. But Dharmapala seems to have been unusually argumentative. And he's very fond of pointing out inconsistencies of Christian doctrine and arguing with his Christian teachers about those inconsistencies. Not only that, as you know, the great holiday, the great festival for Buddhists, the greatest of the year, is Vesak. In Dharmapala's time, of course, it wasn't a public holiday. Christmas was a public holiday, Easter was a public holiday in Ceylon, but not Vesak. But as a youngster, when he was about 13 or 14, Dharmapala thought, well, I'm a Buddhist. I ought to celebrate Vesak. I ought to have the day off from school. So what did he do? He went straight to the headmaster, the Christian headmaster, and said, as a Buddhist, I'd like to have tomorrow off from school because it's Vesak and I want to celebrate it. Well, the headmaster said no, not surprisingly. So what did Dharmapala do? He just took his umbrella and he walked out of the school and he didn't come back the next day and he celebrated Vesak. And when he did go back to school, what happened? He got a very sound thrashing from the headmaster for daring to play hooky and go and celebrate Vesak. And this happened 3 years running. 3 years running, he asked for permission to take Vesak off, was refused, took it anyway, and was thrashed when he went back to school. So this gives you some idea how obstinate and determined he was, even as a very young teenager. Now there's another incident from his school days which is perhaps even more significant. He tells us in some memoirs that he wrote later on in life that it so happened that one of his schoolfellows had died. Apparently the body was laid out, the corpse was laid out somewhere in the school, perhaps in the assembly hall. And the teachers they invited the students to gather around the dead body and offer up prayers. So Dharmapala was also there. He joined them. And as he looked around, he asked himself a question. Why are they praying? Why are they praying? And he looked at the faces of his schoolfellows. He looked at the faces of the teachers. And he saw that they were all afraid. He saw that they were all afraid of death. And that's why they were praying. And he had a sort of realization that prayer, petitionary prayer, is born of fear. And from that day forth, he had no temptation to pray in that sort of way. But one mustn't think that Dharmapala was just a rather uppish, argumentative teenager. He was actually a rather idealistic, dreamy sort of person. And he was very fond of poetry. You can imagine going to those missionary schools. He obtained a very good command of English, and he read very widely and always did read very widely in English literature. And at that time, he was very fond of English poetry. And especially, he was fond of the poetry of Keats and Shelley. Particularly, I think, Shelley. And he read it constantly. He had not only a sort of dreamy, idealistic streak, he also had quite marked mystical and ascetic tendencies.